we begin with your laptop inventory. Many times, a lot of agencies now are doing the same thing as companies in the private sector. They're trying to stretch out their refresh patterns for their laptop inventory and other IT hardware for budgetary reasons. But interesting new study is out from J. Gold Associates saying that that may be exactly the opposite of what you want to do if the point is to try to save money. And the principal at J. Gold Associates, Jack Gold, is my guest now. And welcome to the program. Thanks for being on today, Jack.
Thank you, Francis.
Give us the hypothesis of this report, this study, in a nutshell, and then we'll tear it apart from there.
Sure. Well, we've been talking to a lot of companies who are our clients, and we discuss with them what their implementation strategy should be for computers. Of course, many, many companies are now concentrating on notebooks, not desktop computers. In fact, in large companies today, we'd have to say that the majority of new machines that are going in place are notebook computers. That may or may not be true across the board, but some companies are as much as 75 to 80% of their install base now with notebooks because of the benefits they bring with being able to work from home, work at customer sites, work portably, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are now looking at this, the model that says that you need to replace your notebooks on a standard life cycle. And traditionally, the life cycle for notebooks has been about 3 years. Notebooks tend to get beat up a lot, frankly. They get carried around, they get dropped, they get left in steaming cars or freezing cars in the winter. And so they don't typically last as long as desktops, and of course they're more expensive to repair as well. So when our clients talk to us about what their replacement cycle should be, many of them are now looking at this and saying, well, okay, 3 years in good times was fine. Our budgets have been cut dramatically in some cases, and of course that's true with many companies today. And so they're thinking about holding on to those notebooks, leaving them in place, leaving them deployed with their users for about 5 years now. So what we wanted to do was take a look at what it would actually cost an organization to extend the useful life of a notebook beyond 3 years into years 4 and 5 and see if we could come up with an actual estimate based on what we expected the failure costs for that machine to be, based on the fact that notebooks fail, based on the fact that as they get older, they fail even more.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a car, when it gets to be high mileage, you need to repair it more often. And so we looked at what a typical we did this cost model based on the fact that in looking from year 1 to year 3 with two scenarios. We looked at the total cost, failure cost per machine based on buying machines that have an extended 3-year warranty, which is generally available, but not everyone does today.
Mm-hmm.
We also looked at the model that says if I buy a machine, the first year is covered under warranty, but I'll take a risk and not purchase the machine with warranties under year 2 and 3. And the final scenario we looked at is, okay, we've gotten through the first 3 years. Now, years 4 and 5, which, of course, would not normally be under warranty, what is it going to cost to keep those machines in place?
Mm-hmm. And what did you find when you dug into that dollar-wise? Some of the numbers that I'm seeing in some of this material looks like it's more expensive to keep the old machines than to go out and buy brand new ones.
Well, and indeed it is. What we found was that in a typical scenario, the model we put together was in a medium-sized organization having about 5,000 machines.
Okay.
So it included deployment of the machines, that included repair, replacement, or included help desk costs, service costs, mailing machine back and forth to the end user if they're remote. We assumed a typical failure rate for various devices or components of that device, you know, the screen, the hard drive, the keyboard, et cetera. And what we found was that even under warranty, it costs an organization about $970 per failed machine to repair that machine.
Mm-hmm.
When it's not under warranty, it's the cost is about $1,425. As the machine as you keep the machine longer, we assume that in the first year you'd have an average failure rate of about 12% across the board. By year five, you're up to 32% because, again, high mileage, high use just costs more. So if you look at the typical costs for keeping a machine, this is on a failure basis, right? This is per machine, by the way. This is cost distributed over the entire install base of 5,000 machines. To have a machine for 3 years, to keep a machine for 3 years under warranty, will cost an organization about $600, a little bit over $600.
Mm-hmm.
Related cost, if you keep the machine 1 year under warranty and 2 years not under wararranty, or comparable cost, excuse me, not related, but the comparable cost in that scenario, so it's just 1 year under warranty, is $750, give or take. So the difference between getting a machine with extended warranty, 3 year extended warranty, versus not having that extended warranty is about $150. And what we've told our clients is, if you can, as you're buying, acquiring new machines, if you can get machines with 3 year extended warranty instead of 1 year for less than an additional $150, that's the break even point. You're doing very well.
That's really easily quantifiable, and that makes the decision pretty easy to know what the raw number is. When you think about an individual machine, it doesn't seem, at 12% and even a 32% failure rate, doesn't seem like it's that high. When it's drawn out over a fleet of 5,000 machines, it becomes pretty obvious that if over 5 years 32% of them are going to fail, that keeping yourself in newer technology seems to be a pretty smart move.
Indeed. And in fact, it's even worse than that, Francis, because by year five, under our model, it's not, it's 32% of machines per year are going to fail.
Oh.
So, yes, it gets very, very high by that period of time. There are other things to consider as well, with notebooks. Batteries go quite often. They're considered wear components, just as like you need to replace tires on your car.
Mm-hmm.
They're good for about 300 charge cycles, so that's probably every 2 years you're going to have to replace batteries, and they're not inexpensive.
That's $100 or so a pop right there, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Yeah, at least. So what we found was the cost to keep a machine alive in years four and five, and obviously they're not under warranty, and this is a per machine cost now, again, distributed over the entire installed base, is about $960 for those 2 years. Given that an average enterprise class, business class notebook, we're not talking about consumer devices that you'd buy at Best Buy on sale, but a business class notebook is around $950 to $1,000 to buy. You can pay for a new notebook just by not incurring the cost in year four and five.
Mm-hmm. And that, you haven't said anything yet that I've heard about advances in technology, about the fact that you're, in essence, repairing a three-year-old machine, which in this day and age, there's a tremendous difference between a brand-new machine and the technology that's in a box that's 3 years old.
No doubt about it. And, in fact, what we took a look at is what the productivity loss would be by keeping a machine in place for so long. By year four, you're at least two generations behind in technology, chip technology, memory technology, even perhaps the OS. And so what we estimated, and this, we thought we were being very conservative here because it's hard to get exact number, but we estimated that in year four you'd have approximately a 3% productivity loss because of the old technology, and in year five you'd have a 5% loss. If you put those two together and then you assume a burdened rate, so it's not what you and I are making, but what it actually costs the company to keep us in place, we assume that was about $120,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
That cost, that productivity loss over those 2 years, equates to about $9,600.
Per person?
Per person.
Per workstation. That's amazing.
Yes. It's very, very high. Again, assume if you're not working or frustrated or not being able to be as productive as you could be, 5%. 5% productivity loss is not that really that high. It doesn't take much to lose 5%. And if you do that consistently over a year, that number adds up really quickly.
Yeah, when you explain it out that way, that certainly makes a lot of sense. This report is posted on Jack Gold's website, jgoldassociates.com, and we'll have that linked up later this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we're going to continue our conversation with Jack in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jack Gold, founder and principal analyst at J. Gold Associates. The website is jgoldassociates.com, a pretty clever site there. I can understand why you chose that one, Jack. I appreciate you being on the program with me today. This report that we've been talking about notebooks, can be found. More information about that at your website, and I have that linked up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You also have a publication called Technology Brief that you put out. That's on your website as well. And I wanted to ask you, if I could, about a couple observations in the latest issue of that. You write about going from PC to PS, personal supercomputer, and you give us a little glimpse of the future that I've not seen too many people write about. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit. Give us an idea of what we might be looking at a couple of years down the road.
Sure, I'd be glad to, Francis. So the notion of having a personal computer as it exists today, that is a box with a central processing core, memory, hard drive, screen, et cetera, that we use to do word processing, email, some of the more simple tasks that we normally in our normal day, it's fine. And certainly that's not going to go away. We're going to continue to do that kind of work for a very long time. I was going to say forever, but forever is probably too long. Who knows what will happen in forever. But what is happening and what we're seeing already starting to take place is the notion that the computer chips within our machines are becoming much smarter. And they're becoming much smarter because vendors like Intel and AMD and others are doing multi-core chips. What that means is they're basically taking the CPU, replicating it, and putting it in the box so they can essentially divide up the work. It's a little bit like a production line. The more lines you have, the more product you can churn out. In the not-too-distant future, within the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see machines or chips come out for these machines that will have anywhere from 8 to 16 to 32, perhaps as many as 64 cores, maybe even a little bit higher in higher-end machines. And what these cores are being used for today is for graphics. If you have a high-end gaming type of PC,
mm-hmm.
and you buy an NVIDIA chipset or an ATI chipset, often what you'll find is those machines have 8, 16, 32 cores of processing power. The supercomputers that we're normally used to seeing do large data sets have hundreds or, in some cases, thousands of cores. When we can get a personal computer in the relatively same price range that we get today that have 16 cores or 32 cores that can do parallel jobs for us, that basically are independent production lines, and when the software, of course, catches up to that, we're going to have incredibly powerful machines that allow us to do all kinds of data manipulation, searching that we can't do today, certainly graphics capability as well. And it will, and of course, multimedia. I should include multimedia, things in multimedia, 3D imaging and the like that we can't do very well on existing machines. And that's going to dramatically alter our ability to interact with our computing systems, both in business and in our personal lives. It's going to be a very fascinating environment. And what's driving all of this is the ability for the chip manufacturers to build these massively parallel chipsets at a very reasonable cost. The technology is now coming online that allows them to do so without burdening us with having to go out and buy a supercomputer, which of course can be hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars.
Is this just a logical progression, or is this some kind of exponential leap that we've seen because of some discoveries over the last couple of years that have not been as widely publicized?
There are a couple of of things that are a couple of reasons why this is taking place. One, of course, it is a progression. If you can make chips smaller and faster and cheaper, you can put more of them on in a package to ship to us. But it's also the notion or a redirection, if you will, of how we do computing. It's fairly simple to do email. It's fairly simple to do word processing. It's fairly simple to look at the web in a browser. That is, it doesn't need huge amounts of processing power.
Mm-hmm.
When we start talking about heavy-duty multimedia and graphics in 3D, the amount of processing that takes place goes up exponentially. That's why graphics cards are so much more expensive, because they have so many more chip components in there. And that's what's been driving this. The notion of having multiple parallel processors for graphics being redirected to do other things